I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anelio, and you're listening to The Functional Nerds, episode number 192. That is 8 away from 200, John.
I know.
Eight.
It's kind of crazy. Eight. I know.
Eight is enough.
I know. It's eight. Yeah. If we're just going to stop after 200, we're going to get to 200.
Eight crazy episodes.
Yeah, but that is Patrick Hester. He's an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. My name is John Anelio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanelio.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at johnanelio. And today, we are happy to be joined by Linda Nagata. She is a Nebula and Locus Award-winning science fiction and fantasy author. Her newest release, The Red First Light, was nominated for the 2013 Nebula Award. And Linda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and I'm glad I made it in here before your last 200 episode.
You got in just under the wire. You're like, I was in the 190s.
And that's last eight of them. Okay.
Then now, they hung up.
Now John has people freaking out that we're not going to go beyond 200.
No, we're going to go. Barring Patrick and I get into a big fight, which could happen at any time, which could really, Patrick and I can get into a disagreement about something, and then you'll never see us again. No, actually, that's one of the strengths of our podcast. Patrick is always. One of the reasons we've been able to do it so long is Patrick and I are very good about communicating with each other when, maybe it's like, well, I don't like this, what we're doing, and maybe we can change it to this. And we've always been very good about expressing ourselves in terms of that. And we always make whatever changes we need. And we are very functional nerds, Patrick. Oh, man. Woo. Oh, boy. That's a good one. Oh, score one for me on that one. But I'm so happy I came with that. I have a bunch of questions for Linda. But Linda, why don't you tell us? I know you're preparing a new book that's going to be coming out pretty soon. So maybe you can tell our listeners a little something about what you're working on right now and when people can expect the book to come out.
Yeah, the next book is going to be called The Red Trials. It follows right after First Light. And actually, the release date is a little up in the air right now, but it should be coming out fairly soon. And it picks up on the adventures of our heroes from the first book and starts off with actually a court-martial. It's my first legal fiction that I've ever written and goes on to other things. It's written in the same style and attempt to be a fast-paced adventure. What else can I tell you about it without giving the plot?
I went and I read a bunch of your recent blog posts on your website, and I know you wrote about this on your blog, so I hope it's okay to mention. But I know you had some medical stuff going on where break your jaw? Did you actually break? Is that what actually?
That
happened?
That is what happened. I've been trying to come up with a good story to explain it, but the truth is that I just tripped over some flip-flops going down the stairs and landed on my chin on the concrete.
Oh, ow.
Yeah.
Oh. Fractured my jaw and was on a liquid diet for 7.5 weeks.
I'm now in pain everywhere. See, I'm not one of those. I don't like the movies where people the YouTube videos where people are smacking and hitting. I can't watch those. They make me cringe. And so just hearing that your chin hit the concrete, yikes!
Sorry, Patrick.
Now, so I imagine that maybe set the release date of the book back a little bit. I can only guess.
Just a little bit. It wasn't too bad after the first week or so. You get used to it, but could be worse. Let's put it that way. Yeah, well, I lost 10 pounds, so.
Not the way you want to do it, though, right? Yeah, when I had my wisdom teeth pulled, they were impacted. They had to be surgically removed. Yeah, I lost, 10 pounds, but that's not the way you want to do it.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, I hope you're recovering. You sound fine in terms of, so hopefully you're speaking okay. Did you have to have your like jaw wired and like your mouth wired and
Yeah, it was, they call it elastics, but basically you have rubber bands that keep your upper and lower jaw together.
Yikes. Oh,
which is not a lot of fun, but it could be worse.
Yeah. Well. Hopefully, you're feeling better, and we'll keep going on. And
did anybody talk to you about the potential of bionics or?
No. Yeah. This is Maui. We're not really cutting edge here. So.
All right. Well.
We don't even have microphones for sale.
Microphones haven't made it to Maui yet, so. but let's, you know, before we get into a couple of different topics and a couple of questions that I have for Linda, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Linda, do you have a pick ready for us?
I do. I'm just going to talk about a novel that I read recently. It came out a couple of years ago. First, I just want to say that for quite a while, I wasn't reading a whole lot in science fiction, so I'm way behind. And this is a novel called Germline by T.C. McCarthy, and which I read because I'm trying to catch up on some of the military science fiction out there. And I was just very, very impressed with the characterization in the novel. There's things in there which I wouldn't normally, how can I say, which really aren't what I read books for, and yet it was so well done that it just pulled me through the entire novel. So I have a little, what I call a book rave on my blog talking about it, and so I'm gonna put that as my pick of the week.
Very good. Cool. So that's Germline by T.C. McCarthy. We I saw that when I was looking through your blog, and we've had T.C. on the show before. Patrick, you didn't actually talk to him on the show because I actually interviewed him at Balticon one year, and T.C. is a great guy. And he, a lot of his book is like about sort of the germ warfare, and I know he's got, I think he's got three books in that series now. But he talked about his experiences working for sort of patents and things like that. For he talked about a lot of boring work that he did to eventually arrive at like being able to write these novels. But I like TC a lot, and that's one of my on my to be read pile that has not been read, but I do have to move that up too because you know. It's a nice problem to have when you have all these books that you want to read because there's always one to pull off, but I do always feel bad and feel like I just want to take a year off from work and just sit and read for a year straight. But I think that's many people. So
it can be embarrassing to admit the books that I haven't read yet. So.
Well,
I have good intentions.
I think most of us do, and I do envy some of the book reviewers that I know online who seem to just read a book a day and review five a week. And I don't know how they do it, but I do admire them because I wish I can read that fast. So very good. Patrick, what is your pick this week?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned book reviewers because I was going to talk about Sarah Chorn over at Bookworm Blues, who wrote 184 books last year.
Right.
That's not my pick. My pick is her column at SF Signal, which is called Special Needs in Strange Worlds. And this is a column that focuses on celebrating disabilities in science fiction and fantasy. The column focuses on book reviews, author interviews, and guest posts to highlight the beauty and importance of our flaws. And I'm going to read you something here from her very first post. She says, when we look for disabilities in literature, we tend to focus on the stronger, more obvious ones, the physical and mental maladies that are incredibly limiting and fairly obvious. The truth is there are disabilities everywhere. Most of them are just subtler and less limiting than we expect. Many disabilities hide in plain sight or are overlooked, though their impact on literature, characters, and plots is marked. It's time to celebrate disabilities, all disabilities, and their place in literature. None of the books I've listed in this article would have been an incredible or as memorable as they were without them, and she lists a bunch of them. It's time to shed the light on disabilities and celebrate them, even the unexpected, overlooked ones. They bring strength to characters and empowerment to the readers, and are far more common in books than we in the books we read than any of us seem to realize. And she's been doing this for a while now, and she has tons of people come on and talk about this. And I think it's a great column, and it's over on sfsignal.com, and I just think people should go check it out.
I wholeheartedly agree. I love, that's one of my favorite columns to read over there. And Sarah's doing a great job with it. So thanks for shining the light on that, because I think it's well deserved. So very cool. My pick this week is, I just started watching it. I'm about 4 or 5 episodes into it, and that is Orphan Black. It's a show that a lot of people in our community seem to really enjoy, and I'm really digging it so far. It's up on Amazon Prime season 1 right now. So I think there's out of 10 to 13 episodes, one of those like shorter episode kind of runs that most shows tend to be these days.
Well, it's from the BBC, so that's why.
Yes. Yeah, so it's a BBC show. It runs on BBC America. I'm actually DVRing season 2, which is actually running right now. And it's basically the story of it has to do with cloning, and the main character, the actress is, oh, I'm going to mess up her name. I think it's Tatiana Maslany. Oh, I'm going to screw up her name. I don't have it in front of me right now, but she plays all the clones who are all different. And I don't think she got nominated for an Emmy, but she got robbed if she didn't, because she does an amazing job, because you just really believe they're all different people. You forget that it's the same actress playing them. So it does have a science fiction bent to it. So if you haven't watched it yet and you have the Amazon Prime video streaming service, I recommend you check it out. So that is my pick this week.
And I'm curious, John, in that show, does Jedi Master, what's his name? The Jedi Master who went to the world and started all the clone stuff, is he a part of that at all? Or
what was that?
Cypher Diaz. Cypher Diaz. Yes. Is he part of that show at all? Is
he no, actor? He's not. He's not. No, it's a little more believable than that.
Why, Jedi Master Cypher Diaz?
Oh boy. I've been thinking, there's been a lot of Angry Birds Star Wars in my house the past couple of weeks. My son is very into that right now. Not into Star Wars, like still not going to watch anything Star, but we can talk Angry Birds Star Wars until he's blue in the face. But anyway, so that's my pick, Orphan Black. Now let's get on to it. So a couple of things, Linda, as she mentioned already, that Linda is located in Maui. So how long have you been in Hawaii for, Linda?
Oh, since I was 10 years old.
Where were you before that?
The far north of San Diego.
Do you get tired of people saying Kalikimaka, whatever? Yeah.
Mele Kalikimaka,
yes.
No, not at all. That means Merry Christmas.
So it doesn't really make sense this time of year, but... I was in it's probably not an uncommon story, but my wife and I went to Hawaii for our honeymoon, and we went to Maui. And the most amazing thing, really, I think on the planet, one of the most amazing things is Haleakala, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And
Haleakala, with a little emphasis in the last syllable.
Right. So, well, maybe you can explain it better, because I'm sure you've been to the top of Haleakala. Maybe you can explain to our listeners better than I can what Haleakala is, and what the amazing thing that if you go on a tour at about 4 o'clock in the morning there, what you get to see.
Well, if it's not fogged in.
Yes, if it's not fogged in, yes.
Haleakala is a dormant volcano, 10,000 feet tall. Mm-hmm. At the summit, it's a cinder desert with cinder cones. And, well, you stand at the rim of the crater and you look down. It's a big erosional valley filled with cinder cones. It's incredibly spectacular. It's kind of traditional to go to drive up there at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch the sunrise. It's freezing. It doesn't really matter that we're at 21 degrees north of the equator. We do get rarely snow at the summit, and ice more frequently. This would be in the winter. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's traditional to go up there and watch the sunrise, which frankly is okay. Sunsets are usually far more colorful just because of the angle of the light. But to me, the spectacular thing about it is you can start from the coast and drive up to the summit in about an hour and a half, and you can look down from 10,000 feet onto the ocean. Given a clear day.
It's pretty amazing with the sunrise. The thing that I was not expecting was you're so high up that you see you're kind of above cloud level when you're up there, and it appears like the sun is rising below you you're sort of looking at, you're looking down at the sun coming up. And I wasn't expecting that when I started to see that. It was pretty powerful. It was, you know, you're never really going to see that in too many places on the planet. So it was very moving to me. And if you're ever in Maui, my wife wanted to go do that trip. And I was like, no, I don't want to get up this early. We're on our vacation. Are you crazy? And I'm so glad she made me do it, because it was one of the best things there. And as you said, it is very cold up there, because it drops a couple of degrees every 1,000 feet or so that you get in terms of elevation. And I did not wear appropriate clothing because we were in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. No one expects it. Yeah. But you know, you can see that same effect with the stars at night if you're in the right place, so that you're basically looking down and still seeing stars below you.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's funny because you mentioned not being dressed for it. The first time I went up Pikes Peak, which you can also drive up. And as you're driving up, you're no longer on asphalt. You end up on a dirt road, and there's no guardrail, and it's just a sheer drop. And you're going up this windy road, and you get up to the top. And I remember stopping at this place, and it showed a picture of Pikes Peak, and it showed the elevation. And it said, you know, at the bottom, it's the normal temperature. At the top, it's like you've gone all the way to Alaska, the upper part of Alaska, by the time you get to the top of Pikes Peak. And I thought, huh, that's interesting. What I didn't realize is wearing my shorts and a t-shirt, that when I got to the top of Pikes Peak, it was fucking cold. I had to buy a coat. One of the stupid, you know, touristy coats, because I was freezing.
Yeah. Yeah. Haleakala is the same way. There was a big blanket, and I ended up being under the blanket while we were up there. It's true. It's crazy. But the other thing I wanted to sort of change subjects, because this is something kind of a nerdy thing that I think our listeners would be interested in. It's something that I'm a big supporter of, and something that I use daily. I use something called Instapaper. And on your blog, you talked about Pocket, which I believe Pocket is very similar to Instapaper in what it does. And I'm just always surprised that whenever I bring up Instapaper or Pocket, not as many people seem to know about these things as I think should, because I think it's an amazing thing. And maybe you could tell people a little bit about what Pocket is and how you use it. Because I wish everybody used it, because I think it's a wonderful thing for reading.
Absolutely. I've never heard of it until several weeks ago. And my son-in-law was over here, and he says, you know, if you're not using this, you need to use this. He recommended Pocket. I've never heard of Instapaper. What I use it for is I just got an Android tablet, a Nexus 7. Mm-hmm. And what Pocket lets me do is whenever I'm online, right now I'm on my desktop Mac, where I spend a lot of time. But if I'm on Twitter and somebody recommends a blog post, or I'm surfing around researching something and I run into all these blog articles, instead of sitting here at my desk and trying to read them all, I just click my little button which says Save to Pocket, and it strips off everything except the actual article, saves it so that I can go later on my Android tablet, which is much more comfortable for reading, and just read that very clean looking article. And I have been able to read so much more since I started using that.
Yeah, I think Pocket and Instapaper are very similar. It's the same idea. If you're in Chrome, I know for Instapaper, you get like the little bookmarklet that says read later. So if you come across something, you click read later, and then it just saves it. And then, you know, you can read it on your tablet. You can read it on your phone. What I often do is I use Feedly to read different blogs and things. And I kind of go through that in the morning, but if it's a longer article, I'm not going to read it all there right then, because I just kind of want to get through. It's almost like a news thing where it's like, all right, there, here we go. We're going to do this, but I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I save it for later. And then, you know, you read it when you have your time. And because it's nice sort of spackling throughout the day. It's like, you know, you're sitting waiting somewhere for a little while. It's like, oh, you know, I have 10 minutes. I'll sit and I'll read this little article here. And I get so much more reading done because of it, and I love it, and I wish more people use them, because I think it's perfect for that kind of stuff. And you said you read fiction on it as well, though, in this one blog post. Do you read, like, short stories?
Oh, yeah, short stories. Yeah, it's greatly increased my reading of short stories that are published online.
So like something like Lightspeed or something like that when they
Lightspeed, right? Yeah. Tor.com stories they have there. It just makes it so much easier to sit there holding a little tablet in my hands than sitting up at a desk and trying to read stories. You know, I can go sit in the recliner, I can lie down in bed. It just changes everything.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's funny because I've never used it to read fiction before because I usually just read novels and things. And short stories are interesting because it's not a regular part of my fiction reading, short stories. But anytime I like pick up an anthology, I'm like, God, I love reading short stories. Why don't I read more short stories? And then I don't read them again for like a year, and then I get another. So now, after reading your article, I'm like, oh, I should make sure I get on Lightspeed's thing and like save them so I can read them as short stories with Instapaper, because that would be a nice way to read it. So so thank you for writing about that, because now I'm like, oh, I better go get all of my short fiction this way now too. So
sure.
Pocket's one, and now is Pocket part of Google now, or has Google bought that? Because I don't think they own Instapaper. I think Instapaper is their own thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
The tech companies, it's hard to keep up because someone's always buying somebody else. So
yeah, and what's funny about that, John, is that if Google is listening and they would like to buy the Functional Nerds, we are available for about $3.5 million. So
that's a bargain.
Yeah, I'm totally willing to sell. Absolutely.
Well, you know, talking about fiction, let's talk a little bit about your fiction. So your novel, The Red First Light, is, at least according to some sources, is the first self-published novel to make the Nebula shortlist. So that is an amazing accomplishment. You know, Patrick and I talk a lot about sort of, you know, there's hybrid authors nowadays that do some traditional publishing, and you started being traditionally published, and then you made then kind of got out of writing for quite a while and came back into it through self-publishing. So maybe you could talk a little bit about your journey when you were traditionally published and then how you ended up becoming a self-published author who made the Nebula shortlist.
Sure. I had six science fiction novels that were traditionally published. That was between, I think, 95 and 2003, and they were all hard science fiction novels. I had several short stories at the same time. They were critically received pretty well. How can I put this? A lot of people seemed to really like them, but they did not sell well.
Hard SF has a hard time selling.
You know, it's funny because you look at other people who seem to sell quite well in the hard SF field. At any rate, what happened was I was not at all happy after my last two books came out. And I just had things going on in the family. My kids were teenagers. My parents were in their very elderly years. I was working full time, which I hadn't been before because I'd stayed home with the kids. And writing just got shoved way onto the back burner. So I basically dropped out of the field for about 10 years. And then life opened up, and after spending 10 years trying to find something else that I wanted to do, I was back to writing again. So I wrote a couple of very short fantasy novels. And I should back the truck up a bit and say that even back in the 90s, I'd been very interested in publishing my own books. It's just that element of control which had really appealed to me. Mm-hmm. So when this whole self-publishing thing hit, I jumped in feet first very early. And I was in a spot where I had all the skills. I'd been working for about 10 years in a web development company. So I knew how to...
I knew HTML.
Yeah. I knew, you know, I had all the skills to make ebooks and to use Photoshop. I'd taught myself some InDesign so I could figure out how to lay out print books. So I was in the right place. And so I put out all of my backlist, which I had, I'd gotten the rights back on everything the moment that it went out of print.
Nice. So you actually laid out your own ebooks?
Yeah, I laid out my own print books.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. And I, you know, I still do. So it's an aspect that I really enjoyed for a long time. Now it's getting to be a little.
I was going to say.
Not as interesting now that I know what I'm doing.
It's kind of fun when you're learning and you're going through it. You're right. Like, and then by the third one, you're going, oh, I got to do this again.
Go again. Yes. But at any rate, I did these two fantasy novels, which I really like. They're kind of quirky little off the wall fantasy novels, which they never did too much. And then what happened was I had written a couple of short stories and they were just sort of bubbling with ideas in the back of my brain. And as soon as I finished the second one, I knew that I needed to write a novel. And that turned out to be First Light. And it used ideas from both of these stories. And it was just amazing because I actually had a first draft of this novel in 4 months, which just never happens, not with a science fiction novel.
Wow.
And then it took me another 4 months to revise it, but hey. So that was First Light, and that was my first science fiction novel that I've published in 10 years. And, you know, they say that fantasy is easier to sell than science fiction. But apparently I live in an alternate reality where things are very, very different because people were far more interested in my science fiction than in my fantasy novel. So I published it under my own imprint. But I also work with Bookview Cafe. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've had them on
before. Okay. It's basically sort of a coalition of writers who help each other to publish their books. Now, I publish mine on my own, but I actually do the website and the ebook store at Bookview Cafe. Mm-hmm. And I had the book is for sale there. And several of the people there read the book. I think one person read it, said she really, really liked it, and that inspired a few other people to read it. And basically, I think the word started getting around that this might be worth looking at. And I think that's partly where the attention came from. And then I had several breaks when I'd published the book. For example, I was able to guest blog on Charles Stross's blog, which mm-hmm. is just a wonderful publicity opportunity.
Sure.
And I was able to write an article at IO9 that talked about hard science fiction. So, you know, I had a few really good breaks to help get the word out. And, you know, I think that helped increase the awareness of the book.
Now,
I had more people looking at it. And that's, I think, how I got to the Nebula short list.
I'm curious, what was the catalyst for actually starting your own imprint?
Well,
because that's like big time professional kind of stuff that you're doing there. You're actually having to fill out paperwork and form companies and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I did actually form a company. It's called Mythic Island Press LLC. And at the time that I did it, I was planning to do a couple of related ventures with my daughter. But as it turns out, she got married and has her own business. So I'm just doing the publishing business, and I'm the sole owner at this point. Setting up the LLC in Hawaii was actually no big deal. So I think that's very different from some other states.
Okay. But now you have to do quarterly taxes. You have to keep track of everything. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's all the fun business stuff. It lets you feel really official. Yeah.
So what has now, would you ever try to get traditionally published again, or are you just really satisfied with publishing, doing it through your own imprint?
I'm looking at it from a business perspective. I mean, like it says on my blog, indie and traditional publishing. I'm not completely against traditional publishing, and I'm not, you know, a complete cheerleader for indie publishing. As has been said by many people, every writer needs to find their own path. So what looks most advantageous to me is what I hope to be doing. Mm-hmm. So no, I haven't sworn off traditional publishing, but I could very well continue the way that I'm doing right now.
Well, and it also seems like a lot of the authors that we talk to on the show and that we know, it seems like a lot of, yes, there is the war between the two, but it also seems like there's a lot of people that do this hybrid approach where some things they publish on their own, some things they go through traditional publishing, and obviously both have their pros and cons. And if you have a project that fits a traditional publishing that they want to publish it, then yeah, it makes, you know, one, I think one can benefit the other for sure.
That's, yeah, exactly. I think it's been, as an independent publisher, it's been very difficult to really get the word out on this book. You know, like I said, I had some really good breaks along the way, and yet it's still, you're not going to see it at the top of at most lists at Amazon. So, you know, maybe that's something that a traditional publisher could do better. It's just, I don't know.
And then I think the other way of looking with traditional publishing, it's like, yeah, they can get the books in stores and all that, but they're publishing a lot of books. And if they don't give your book enough attention, what's the point? Like, if they're not going to do much in terms of helping to promote your book, because your book is getting released the same month that John Scalzi's book is getting published or whoever, and Scalzi's book's going to get a lot of attention and yours isn't. So what's the point of going through a traditional publishing with something like that?
Right. I mean, to me, that's one of the huge benefits of publishing my own books, is that I can afford to invest in promoting the books, even if it means taking out ads or writing articles, because for every book sold, I make a meaningful amount of money. Mm-hmm. As opposed to if I tried doing that with, say, a mass market release where I'd be making, you know, what, 50 cents a copy? Mm-hmm. It's just a completely different equation. Or selling a few thousand copies independently can bring me in far more money than if a publisher sold a few thousand copies. So the whole scale is entirely different. So it's really a balance. And if the publisher needs to offer enough to make it worthwhile to give that up. So whether what they're offering is publicity or a larger advance or any of those things, it's just, I think every deal you need to look at on its own and see which way would work better for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, Linda, unfortunately we are running out of time. So, before we do go, I do please tell, you know, so the follow-up to First Light is coming out and you did mention that. So I know we sort of mentioned that the release date's has been sort of fluid, I guess.
Yes.
around when, if you can give like a little bit of a timeline where people may expect it to be out.
Very likely it'll be out very soon. If you come check my blog, that's where the news will be posted. But in the meantime, since I know most of you haven't read First Light, you could look for that. That's the Red First Light. It's a near future military thriller.
All right. And why don't you tell people your website and your Twitter handle so they can keep up with you?
Okay. My Twitter handle is @LindaNagata. And my website is mythicisland.com.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, and for me with this week, you can just go check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter @johnanilio. Patrick, what do you have going on there this week?
Same stuff I've talked about before. Now, as we're going into this week, you've already missed my free Scrivener class. It was last week. And I know you feel bad about that. That's a Delve Writing. So if you want to learn the advanced stuff of Scrivener, you need to go to atfmb.com and click on my link and sign up for the advanced class. It is a paid class, but you get a discount by doing it there. And then I'll also, if you're coming to the Delve class online, I will be actually giving out a code to get a discount off of Scrivener from Literature and Latte. So it's well worth your time. That's going to be on the 29th of May. So I'm pushing people to go to that, because I had a great time at Pikes Peak's Writers Conference teaching Scrivener. As we all know, word sucks. I'm looking at you, Linda.
Yes, I use Word.
Yes. I thought you might, but that's okay. I don't hold that against you. So yeah, Scrivener, you know, it's a great thing. And so come to my classes. People are really enjoying it. The MC at Pikes Peak Writers Conference came to my Scrivener class, and then he went up on stage and told everybody that it was a life-changing experience. So there.
Wow.
Yes. HTFMB.com. And of course, the Hugo nominated podcast over at SFSignal.com and Kirkish Reviews and all that good stuff. I am ATFMB everywhere.
Excellent. Okay, everybody. Thank you for joining this week, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Thank you, John. Thanks, Patrick.
Bye.
Sunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.